It's time to register to vote for the president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Each congregation or multi-point parish must register their pastor and lay voters with the LCMS Office of Secretary by Sunday, March 24th of 2019. A nomination form has been mailed to every LCMS congregation. Learn more at issuesetc.org/LCMSPresident. issuesetc.org/LCMSPresident.
I've hunted every Night Fury
except yours.
Hand him over.
I will never give him up.
Then I will destroy everything you love.
We are no longer safe here. We all have to disappear completely off the map. We have to fight for their freedom. Come on, Mike.
You're nothing without your dragon.
Attack!
Show them what you got, bud. Save him. It's you and me, bud. Always.
That's a clip from the trailer for the movie How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. We're reviewing that movie. Pastor Ted Gee says it has a little bit to do with both the fourth and the sixth commandments about obedience to parents and chastity. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Wednesday afternoon, March the 6th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. After our movie review with Pastor Ted Gee, Joy Pullman of The Federalist will join us. We'll discuss two issues. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission has dropped more charges against Baker Jack Phillips. That's good. The last time they did that, they didn't drop their charges, and it went to the Supreme Court, and Jack Phillips won. We'll also talk about federal school choice with Joy Pullman. Then Mary Kate Knorr, Executive Director of Illinois Right to Life, will explain some of the extreme abortion legislation that is working its way through the Senate and the House in the state of Illinois. After that, we'll get a little bit of a biography of third century martyrs Perpetua and Felicitas, remembered by the Church on the 7th of March. Joining us to review the movie How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, Pastor Ted Gee. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
This is the third in a trilogy. Give us the premise of the entire trilogy.
These are all animated films. And they're all, I think all of them are in 3D also, or available in 3D. This is kind of like set in a kind of Viking kind of world where the first film, Vikings and dragons are kind of mortal enemies. But the character of Hiccup, the son of the chief Stoic, the chief of the Viking clan that they're a part of, ends up in a friendship with a very deadly dragon that ends up being called Toothless. And as a result, then the Vikings and the dragon start to become friends in this particular little community of Berk, and then it's like, what does that mean for the wider community around them? And of course, there's still people who are afraid of dragons or want to capture them and use them for their own nefarious purposes. And you get some of that in the second film, and then in the third film, you get more of that again. The thing that happens, though, along the way is the rest of the Viking community in Berk embrace the dragons, etc. And there's all these family relationships. So Stoic, the father, in the second film dies, saving his son. And then also in the second film, his long-lost mother is brought back into the picture. There's kind of this narrative of growing up from being a boy to being a man through these three films. And by the end of it, Hiccup now is the chief, the chieftain in the Viking colony of Berk.
So how does the plot of this latest one unfold?
It starts off with kind of a rescue mission to rescue some dragons that have been trapped by some warlords that want to use them for their own purposes. And when you get back to the community of Berk, the place is just overrun with dragons. Apparently they've been doing this over and over again, and there's too many of them, and it's kind of stressing everyone in Burke out just a little bit. It's a little bit too much for them. They're all doing okay with it, but it seems like this utopian ideal of living with dragons is becoming harder for them. So as a result, there's a search for this hidden world of the dragons where maybe they could go and live there together in peace and harmony, particularly because there's a dragon hunter voiced by F. Murray Abraham who is hunting down the last of the Night Furies, which Toothless Hiccup's dragon is that kind of dragon. So that kind of springboards the rest of the film. There's some romance between Toothless and another dragon like him, a female dragon. And then there's just all of this kind of unwinding of the story, which focuses it in on Hiccup as the chief of these Vikings and having to grow up and become the responsible adult leader that he needs to be.
So you point out that it's not so much about even the conflict or the villains in the various films, but it's more focused on the transformation of the central characters or the character arc of the central characters.
Yeah, you know, all of these villains in these How to Train Your Dragon films, they just kind of set up scenarios in which then the characters themselves can grow. They're not as important as you'd think, except for the fact that they help, move the story forward in certain ways. So in the second film, of course, the very first film, Hiccup is a little kid, and he's got this kind of like very pure idealism where he thinks that you know, everything can be solved easily, that you just have to kind of like get to know the dragons, everything will be fine. In that way, he was kind of not wrong in the overarching story of the whole thing. But that idealism doesn't work for everything. And he was often not as respectful to his father as he needed to be. And the second film, his father was trying to give him advice about things. He wouldn't listen to his father. The advice that he was being given was, you can't just sit down and talk it out with the villain. This is not the kind of villain where you can do that. And of course, that's what Hiccup tries to do. And the villain won't listen to reason. And the villain tries to kill Hiccup. And the father steps in at the last second and puts his life on the line, dies, saving his son. And by that way, he has to learn a hard lesson about, you know, like idealism isn't the way to go in all instances. And he's growing as a character. So that now, of course, in the third film, his father's gone, but he wants to, you know, honor his father. And his father was the one who started this search for the hidden world of dragons. And then he himself decides to pick up this search so that he can, you know, save both the dragons and the people of Burke. But he's growing into this kind of more adult, responsible way of dealing with things.
Is this apparently the last one? Does the story, because it sounds like all the loose ends are kind of brought together. Is this the last one as far as you know?
They could make more, I suppose, but they don't have to. This is good. Like, this would be a perfectly good place to stop. There's also been apparently two TV shows, Dragons Riders of Burke and Dragons Race to the Edge, which were in production from 2012 to 2014 and 2015 to 2018. So there's been a lot of this. So I don't know that they need to make more of them. And it has a real kind of satisfying conclusion where now the character of Hiccup is now an adult. And like we always have to say sometimes, that there are some spoilers in here. So if you haven't seen it, I'm going to spoil one or two things just now. You know, him and the character of Astrid, this Viking maiden, like they became a couple along the way. And in this last film, at the end of the film, they get married. And then there's an extra scene at the very end where they're shown with their kids. And so it's a very kind of, this is concluded kind of ending to the whole thing. They don't really, really need to do more of them. I think it's a fairly complete unit.
Let's talk a little bit about some of the overlap with some Christian sensibilities. And you've already mentioned this. And I do believe that in a review of one of the earlier How to Train Your Dragon films, we actually discussed this as a problematic element of the film, and that having to do with the fourth commandment. You mentioned that the son here, it was not always entirely obedient to his father.
Yeah, I mean, Hiccup was not excelling in keeping the fourth commandment in the first couple films. That kind of changes for him by the time you get to this third film, because now he is the authority. And somehow that now makes a big difference for him as a character, right? And then the other thing that's interesting with it is that, you know, early on they're kind of buckling against like the ways of the past, you know, because they want to incorporate dragons into the everything and him and his friends and the rest of it. But at this point now, he's the chief. His friends are now his best supporters, and they aren't buckling against or, you know, pushing back against authority. Now they're very supportive of him. So, and they give him advice, and it's not bad advice, and you can see that they cherish him. So, you know, this is fitting really well into particularly, you know, as Lutherans, you know, we, the small catechism, the explanation, you know, we should fear and love God so we do not despise or anger our parents or other authorities, but honor them, serve and obey them, love and cherish them. So for the fourth commandment, then Hiccup is, how do I honor my father when my father died? So he still has a relationship with his father, even though his father's dead. You know, how does he, you know, deal with his mother? That's part of the movie as well now. And then him as a leader and trying to be a leader who is both true to his vocation, but also one who looks after the needs of his people that he serves as leader. So this is kind of, if you look at it, if you were just to watch one of the films, the first one by itself or the second one by itself, and you thought about the fourth commandment, it wouldn't look that good. But when you look at all of them together, you start to see this overarching pattern where, you know, the actual growth of this child from childhood to adulthood, Hiccup, becomes obvious in this, and it actually comes together very well at the end.
Also, the sixth commandment comes into play a little bit here. How so?
Yeah, you know, last time we talked about this, when we talked about the second film in the trilogy, we talked about, you know, a couple kind of peculiar things that they had in it. Like they had this character of Roughnut, who's a twin who is voiced by Kristen Wiig, the comedian. And, you know, she did this kind of weird thing where she was like ogling this character of Eret, son of Eret, played by Kit Harington. And it was kind of a weird thing. And it was more than just a joke. It seemed to be too much of a joke, or it went too far. And it got into kind of like this kind of lustful gaze kind of thing that was going on. The other thing we talked about in connection with the second film was that there was a lot of talk about one of the characters of this one called Gobber, who was played by Craig Ferguson, who does the voice for it, and how it turned out there was a kind of a throwaway line in the movie, but then through talking to the director, who himself is gay, you know, it came out that Gobber was a gay character. And of course that created a lot of heat, and people talked about that, and it was, you know, a thing when the film was coming out. Well, in this film, that's not as big a deal in the film. They don't, or the conversation around the film hasn't really talked about that as much. So, you know, there are a couple moments where you get Gobber kind of showing some infatuation towards this Eret character played by Kit Harington, voiced by him. But overall, it's very mild in comparison to something even like Beauty and the Beast, when we talked about the live action Beauty and the Beast. This is very mild in this film. They're not making a big deal about it. And then the character of Roughnut also, you know, they don't have this kind of weird thing that they had in the previous film. You know, she's a bit of a dunderheaded character. Like, she's actually the reason why the villain succeeds at one point in the film before he fails. Not because the villain was really clever, but just because she was really not clever. But when it came to all of the, you know, sexually pure and decent life, she is much more pure and decent in this film. Probably the bigger deal, though, for this, like if you're sitting down to talk to kids about this film, would be the characters of Hiccup and Astrid, who previously had been like dating and then kind of engaged, and the concept of marriage kept coming up, and that they were, you know, perhaps this was going to happen. Well, in the course of this film, again, like they don't, like there's no suggestion that they are having premarital sex. They are certainly a couple, but they do get married. And at the end of that, after that's happened, and then and only then do they start having kids. So it follows a very traditional heterosexual framework for a couple who move from dating to marriage to family. So in that way, it's very good. And then also what is reflected or kind of paralleled in that is the character of Toothless, the dragon, who finds this romance with this other dragon that's like him, this Light Fury. And they have this romantic kind of relationship developing, which again, at the very, very end of the film, they're shown to be together with little tiny baby dragons. So this is, it kind of mirrors that story of Astrid and Hiccup as well. So in that way, it fits much more clearly, or much more closely, I should say, with what we believe, teach, and confess in the Sixth Commandment, that we should fear and love God so that we lead a sexually pure and decent life in what we say and do, and husbands and wives love and honor each other. So in that way, it's really actually quite positive how it all kind of comes together in the end.
We're talking Pastor Ted Geese, reviewing the movie How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World. Pastor Geese taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity and the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. On the other side of the break, how does he account for the popularity of this franchise? Stay tuned.
Everybody in the neighborhood is dressing up to be there too. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies, who cares what picture you see?
Issues Etc. regular guest, Pastor Matt Harrison, is the author of our Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism. This new devotional resource is available in print and as an ebook. Learn more about Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040 and request the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. Why am I joyfully Lutheran?
Listen to the best of the church's music for the season of Lent at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Sacred music for the season of Lent, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Lutheranism in the Public Square. You're listening to Issues Etc.
It is the greatest adventure you could ever possibly imagine. It's demanding, it's hard, it's challenging, and what a blessing it is.
Dr. Larry Rast, president of Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana, on why a man should consider the vocation of pastor.
And it is an incredible blessing to be honored with the opportunity to work with these incredible young men and older men as well, who are committing themselves to the proclamation of God's word, the right distinction of law and gospel, and to take the good news of Jesus Christ into all the world.
You can find out more about studying for the pastoral ministry at Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, at ctsfw.edu or call 1-800-481-2155. Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, forming servants in Jesus Christ who teach the faithful, reach the lost, and care for all. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin, reviewing the movie How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, with Pastor Ted Geese. In the course of that conversation, we've talked a little bit about both the Fourth and the Sixth Commandments. Here's something from the Fourth Commandment from the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? Instruction, Meditation, and Prayers on Luther's Small Catechism by LCMS President Pastor Matt Harrison. He writes, Jesus repeatedly acknowledged legitimate authority. He acknowledged the authority of religious leaders. He recognized the authority of the Roman government, and he deeply honored his own mother. Even while hanging on the cross, Jesus kept the commandment perfectly. It's a taste of what you'll find in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for March, called Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran? It's available both in print and as an ebook from Concordia Publishing House. When you call them, mention Issues Etc. 1-800-325-3040 and ask for Why Am I Joyfully Lutheran by Pastor Matt Harrison. 1-800-325-3040. Pastor Geese, how do you explain the popularity of the How to Train Your Dragon franchise?
Well, I mean, here's the thing. Like, dragons are super popular. Dragons are kind of dinosaur adjacent for kids. You know, they're fanciful. They have this kind of peculiar connection to history. So if you go back into history, there's all sorts of drawings and things of dragons. So lots of kids like dragons. Plus, dragons, you know, fly and they breathe fire. And it's all the kind of stuff that kids kind of like. So I think that by itself is probably a winning strategy when it comes to, you know, kids related stuff, right? So that's going to be a kind of a, you know, a draw all by itself. But really, I think, you know, you could have that and it could just be terrible, right? Like, what really I think keeps people coming back to this particular series is that fact that you have this character of Hiccup who learns from his mistakes, continues to grow, and, you know, really becomes an exemplary individual by the end of all of it. So I think that people are going to be quite satisfied with how it wraps up in that way. But already by the end of the second film, you could kind of see that this was moving more so maybe in that direction.
Do you think we have reached the point now with the animated features that as the audience, we are no longer marveling at what this kind of technology that produces these things can do in terms of its likeness to reality or its, you know, the ability to animate things that were just kind of thought too complicated before? Where we're not marveling at the spectacle anymore, we're actually enjoying the story.
Yeah, I think we're bridging towards that. I know that, you know, like there's still moments in this that are just like kind of surprisingly well done. Like there's a moment where Toothless and the Light Fury are on the beach and they're kind of courting each other. And it's something as simple as just the way that they move around and like there's some sand that gets kicked up. And I was watching it and I thought to myself, wow, that's like really good CGI. Like that sand is like pretty tremendous. Plus, you know, when they actually find the hidden world, it's quite spectacular. So I think that there's still going to be moments of awe. I mean, I think a lot of people probably went and saw a movie like Avatar, let's say, because of just how incredible it looked. You know, and they may have like put up with a bunch of other things that they didn't care about to see this spectacle. I think that, you know, because they're getting so good at this stuff and it's a mile away from where things used to be. But I think you're right. I think that they are kind of, it's starting to become the thing where you can watch it and it isn't a distraction throughout the whole film. It, you know, it is the way these movies are presented. So, you know, like even now, like writing the review, like, do I need to put computer animated or can I just put animated? Right. And when those films first started coming out, people would always have to say computer animated. And I think that people are becoming more and more familiar and used to this kind of way of presenting stories.
Do you think it might also be changing not just the way we consume the content of films? I was thinking about, having watched The Incredibles 2 recently, that I love the movie anyway.
Right.
But eventually you just don't care that you're watching animation. You don't even really notice it. It's so stylized in that case that you just stop noticing that. But do you think it also changes the way that actors are acting? Because a lot of times they're just standing in a studio voicing the character and then they walk away with a nice fat paycheck for what would ordinarily have been a much bigger commitment on their part in terms of their time and talents.
I know that like the actor Ian McKellen, who played Gandalf in the Lord of the Rings films, really had a good time doing it when he was doing the Lord of the Rings films. But when they went to do the Hobbit films, almost all of his stuff was like that, what you're talking about, where it was just all green screened and, you know, he was physically there doing things, but sometimes not even with the actors that he was acting with. And it's very hard to act off of people who aren't there. So he found it was very, very difficult for him. And some actors like Andy Serkis, who's also in the Lord of the Rings films as Gollum and has been in things like King Kong and, you know, in the Planet of the Apes films that they've been making lately. He excels in that kind of work where, you know, they put all the dots on the person's face and the computer is like reading out where the facial expressions are and like all of that kind of thing. With a film like this, it's still more traditional animation in a way that they, you know, they're in front of a microphone and they're delivering their lines and then it all comes together in the final assembly. But, you know, like when you think of Marvel films from Disney, for instance, a lot of that is pieced together. And, you know, all of that kind of way of filmmaking really started with the prequels for the Star Wars films when George Lucas was putting those three together. And it has really changed the way filmmaking works. So some actors are going to take to it and some actors are going to have a hard time with it. And, you know, like, I guess the ones that take to it and do a great job are going to be the ones that are going to have an easier time getting work as more and more of these films kind of keep coming out. You know, and as far as, like, audiences, that there are lots of moments where audiences will be watching things and you get these kind of peculiar moments. Like, in a lot of these Marvel films, they'll de-age people. So they'll take, like, an actor and make them look younger, using old footage and running it through a computer and everything. And it's kind of, there's this uncanny valley, this kind of part of it that is, it doesn't look 100% right all the time. When it really works, it's even more strange. You run into these things more and more these days. And I think those are still things that audiences are kind of like getting accustomed to, but I think they are getting accustomed to it.
Well, apparently, I read this a couple months back that there's enough leftover footage of older Carrie Fisher that they plan to feature her in future Star Wars installments, at least one, because they got enough to piece together through their wizardry and dark arts, or however they do this.
Right.
So they can actually make her a character appearing on the screen, not just trying to animate her on the screen as they've done with young Carrie Fisher before.
Yeah, all of the ones and zeros start adding up. That's going to be for the last of the Star Wars films in this current Star Wars trilogy. They're going to do that. So, because Carrie Fisher died before the release of the second film, The Last Jedi, but before it was released to the public. And here's the thing is, like, will they get good enough? Like now I think that they need to get quite a bit of footage to kind of build out this character. They need a lot to work with. But could they take like Humphrey Bogart, like take every movie with Humphrey Bogart in it, or Lauren Bacall, or, you know, some older actor from who's been long dead? Like, if they were quite prolific in their work and they had good stuff to work with, could they take somebody and put them in a modern film and just add them in as a character? Like, is, you know, are they going to start to do that kind of thing? Like, at what point does your right to your likeness, like some of these people like Carrie Fisher and the like, you know, when they signed contracts in the past, like how much of themselves did they give away when they signed contracts? You know, I think these are going to be more and more the kind of things that studios and actors and people are going to have to kind of think about as they work on films like this.
Did you ever see the film Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid?
Yes.
Steve Martin film, where he was ahead of his time incorporating himself into a bunch of old films that...
Splicing together all the footage.
Yeah, long dead actors.
Yeah. And in that film, Edith Head, the costume designer, they brought her in to make sure that the costumes matched. So with the old footage, because she was still around, which is kind of an interesting thing. And Edith Head is kind of a person that they partly based the character from The Incredibles on, who makes all the superhero costumes. anyway, so that's just kind of that was a real interesting film, and I think that they would really be able to do something like that much more effectively now, even more effectively than, you know, Dead Men Don't Wear Plaid.
You can read Pastor Ted Geese's review of How to Train Your Dragon, The Hidden World, under the Listen on Demand page at issuesetc.org. Pastor Ted Geese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Joy Pullman of The Federalist will be our guest on the other side of the break. We're going to talk about two issues. The Colorado Civil Rights Commission has dropped its latest charges against Baker Jack Phillips. And we'll talk about Republican support for federal school choice programs.
St. Paul says in 1 Thessalonians 5, Panto te chairete, rejoice always, always rejoice. And the word he uses there is the same word which is used for grace, same root.
Pastor Matt Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, talking about his presentation at the 2019 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
By grace you are saved by faith, and this not of yourselves. It is a gift of God. That's square one. And then Paul goes on to say, pray without ceasing and give thanks. Those all belong together. Rejoice, pray, and give thanks, all under the grace of Christ. The result is a deep joy.
You can meet and hear President Matt Harrison making the case for being joyfully Lutheran at the one and only 2019 Making the Case Conference, Friday, June 7th and Saturday, June 8th at Concordia University, Chicago. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org.
St. Jacobi Lutheran Church in Shawnee, Wisconsin has a special guest each and every week. It isn't you, but it is Jesus Christ. He is a guest, and he is also the one who comes to serve you with his preached word and his broken body and shed blood. You are invited to be served by Jesus on Saturday evening at 6:30 and Sunday morning at 9 a.m. Visit www.stjakobi.org for more information.
Join the tradition of Lutheran teacher education at Concordia University Chicago. Choose from early childhood, elementary, secondary, or special education tracks and learn to bring God's love into your classroom. Our programs are nationally accredited, so you'll be equipped to serve at one of 2,500 Lutheran schools across the United States. Visit cuchicago.edu to learn more and apply today.
Daily exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Looking for a foreign language program that will revolutionize your students' vocabulary knowledge and their understanding of grammar? How about a program that teaches critical thinking skills, too? Look no further than Memoria Press's Latin curriculum. Students of all ages can use these Latin study programs. Give your students the gift of Latin today. To order, visit memoriapress.com and save $5 on your next order by using the coupon code LPR9. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
An average of 20 military veterans kill themselves every day. Project Operation Barnabas is a network of LCMS congregations who reach out to veterans and their congregations and their communities with the gospel of Jesus Christ. Operation Barnabas is a program of LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. Find out more at lcms.org/armedforces. Serving those who serve. LCMS Ministry to the Armed Forces. lcms.org/armedforces.